with you guys. It's my joy and honor. Thank you for inviting me last night to the dinner. I had a good time. I especially really enjoyed the skit that the youth did. You had me laughing very hard. I think that was probably funnier than any of the Super Bowl commercials that we'll be on later today. yeah. Speaking of it, so we're at Chinese New Year, and that is a holiday that is near and dear to all of you. Here in the West, there's an equally important holiday to a lot of people today, which is Super Bowl Sunday. And maybe some of you are excited to go and have some parties with that. You know, as a lot of people are going to be going home and from churches today, and people that don't go to church, they're going to be going and having Super Bowl parties and watching the Super Bowl. I'm going to be going home because I'm a high school teacher and grading some quizzes and preparing for some classes this week. Just thinking about the Super Bowl, as for if you've watched any of sports news for a while, there's people that are forecasting who will win, and that forecast changes, and there's a lot of people that have their hopes resting on certain forecasts that, oh, the Patriots will win, or oh, the Rams will win because of their offense, and they're really worried about the forecast. Some of them have even maybe have some money involved in whether or not that goes. And again, as a teacher, the forecast that I am most hopeful for today is the weather forecast, because it says there might be some snow this week. And for you students, just so you know, I'm sitting around in the teacher's lounge this week, and we teachers want snow just as badly as you do, maybe even more. so we're hoping. So it's the new year, and I just thought that starting the new year would be a good chance and a good time or opportunity to start preaching and teaching through the beginning of this story. And so I asked Pastor James if I could speak about, do a series on the book of Genesis. And he said that would be great. And so I'm really excited about that, because I really love the book of Genesis. It has been something that has been foundational for me over the years, since my time in high school, when I was really beginning to learn about the Bible and going to Bible college. Something that's really impressed itself upon me more than I really understood as a high school student is that this book, the Bible, is a story. It's a big, grand story. And in fact, our faith is a story, which really sets apart Christianity from so many of the other philosophies and religions that have existed and cropped up throughout human history that exist today, because so much of religion is ideas about God, ideas about this world. We all kind of look at this world and go, wow, things could be better. And people throughout human history have thought of ways that could be better. People have kind of intrinsically understood there's something out there beyond the physical, what we see. There's some kind of supernatural thing. And again, human civilization for a long time has recognized there's something more than what we see and feel. And so we're trying to figure it out. And people have come up with ideas and tried to think through stuff. But the Christian faith says it's not about a bunch of ideas. It's a story about why the world is the way it is. And more than that, it's not a story about how we can try as humans to figure out how to connect with this supernatural realm. It's a story about how the supernatural realm came and invaded our world and said, I'm going to do something about the problem of this world. He came into history and did something. And that's why our faith is a story, because it's a story about what God has done. And I have, over the years when I was younger, thought about my faith and even shared my faith more in terms of ideas and thoughts that I could teach people. And it always is kind of an awkward conversation with people. But as I've come to understand my faith as the story of the universe, why the universe is the way it is, and how God has come and done something about it, it makes talking about it much easier. It makes understanding it much easier for me as well. And so Genesis is the beginning of this story. I had a college professor once who kind of jokingly, but in truth, said that whenever you are reading a story, if you have to read a story for English literature or something and you just don't have time, if you read the very beginning of the story and the very end of the story, you'll likely get a good idea of what the whole story is about. That's not an excuse for you high school students. It's just what this teacher said. And there's some truth to that. If we look at the beginning of a well-crafted story and the end, we can get an idea of what this story is really about. One of my favorite stories since I was in high school was the Lord of the Rings stories. I grew up, I read those. We had this big Lord of the Rings book that was a gift that had sat kind of in our house as a kid, and I didn't know what it was. It was like this big, like I thought it was like a magical book or something. And then in high school, I finally started reading and said, wow, I really like this story. And it's a big sprawling story. And if you're not a reader, maybe you've seen the movies. It's three big movies. There's all kinds of things going on. But if you read the first two chapters of that story, you find out that there's this ring that has to be destroyed or evil will overcome the world. And as you get to the end, you find out, I'll just tell you, maybe you haven't seen it, but the ring gets destroyed, and the evil doesn't win. And you can find that out, and there's lots of stuff going on, but that's really what it's about. There's this plot to the story, and there's one kind of conflict. This ring has to be destroyed, or evil will win. As we talk about Genesis, and because it's foundational for everything I believe, I've already touched on some of these things in my sermons about prayer, and so there'll be a little overlap with some ideas and thoughts, and as we've talked about Bible study in the Sunday school class, but I think repetition is good, and hearing parts of story is good, and so as we talk today, we're going to talk about some things that are foundational. I believe that this book really is one story, and just like Lord of the Rings, even though there's all kinds of things going on in here, there's one plot that we can get to. And as I think about what my faith is about, I think about this one plot and this story and where it begins. So the beginning of the story is Genesis, and the very first thing in this story is that God creates a world. He creates a world, and he creates one day, and he looks at it, and he says, that is good. And he creates another day and says, that is good. And he creates another day and another, that's good. And he gets to the end, and he doesn't say, after he's created everything, after all 6 days and created humans, he doesn't say it's good. He says it's very good. Very good. Everything about this is good. And we've talked about that in here. What's so good about it? Well, we have these perfect human relationships, this man and this woman in this marriage, and there's no hint that anything is going wrong with their marriage. We don't have a hint of death in the story or sickness in the story. Humans are without shame in front of their God. No shame at all. Nothing to hide. There's an abundance of food, and the people have this perfect harmonious relationship with the world itself, with animals and with plants. They're taking care of it as God intended them to take care of it, and it's just providing an abundance of blessing for them. And in fact, that word is used as you talk about the new year, the word blessing, that God blessed this world. He said, it's a blessing. It's a blessing to be here, and you guys are blessed, and so be fruitful and multiply. This is the beginning of this story. And it's a good story and a good beginning to a story. But in chapter 3, we find out the main conflict of this whole story. Because this character called the serpent comes in, and he convinces the man and the woman to rebel against God. And they rebel against God, they sin, and right after they sin, the opposite of blessing comes. God comes and says things are now cursed. There's a curse upon man and woman's relationship. They're not going to relate the way they're supposed to. There's a curse upon the earth itself. It's not going to produce an abundance, and you're going to have to work hard. There's a curse on life itself. You're going to die and return to the dust. There's a curse, and you're going to be removed from the tree of life. You're going to be denied access from this tree that brings life. There's a curse on, in a sense, it doesn't specifically say this, but we see that all of a sudden they have shame, and they're hiding themselves from God and hiding themselves from each other. There's something to hide now. The world is broken, and the world is cursed. And this is the main conflict of this story. Just like I said in Lord of the Rings, we can boil all that down to a ring that needs to be destroyed. The conflict of this story is the world is broken and cursed, and God wants to bless it. God wants to restore blessing. That's what this story is about. I think I might have told you once that when I was teaching through these chapters to my junior high students when I was a youth pastor, and I actually did this in my high school class just this year as well with my freshmen, we took in our classroom and I brought in kind of some plants, and in my high school classroom I brought in some plastic plants too, some trees, so they'd really fill up the side there, and I brought in platters of fruit. And I had us all sitting around in these comfy chairs, and I invited the students to eat the fruit, and we had these trees that were there, and we talked about this story of Genesis 1 and how everything was very good. And I asked the students, as you look at the story, what is good? And they started pointing out some of those things. There's no problems with these relationships. Everyone's getting along. There's no shame. There's an abundance of food. We started seeing all these good things. And then I had put a big piece of tape on the floor when I was a youth pastor. Actually, this year I put some tables across the middle of our room, and I wrote on them Genesis 3 in really big letters. And we talked about the Genesis 3 story, about how man and woman rebelled and how it brought curse. And on the other side of our classroom, I went to a Halloween store and got some skeleton parts and laid them all on the room. And I brought rocks, and I went out and got a bunch of blackberry thorns and put them all in the room. And I made us sit down on the ground right in the midst of all of this stuff. And when we talked about what did we lose after sin, and they started talking about the fact that these relationships are broken now. Man and woman aren't getting along in their marriage. We see death. We see hard labor. We see people laboring and toiling without the great purpose of doing it as God's image bearers. There's brokenness to the story. And then I asked the kids, I said, we see this in the story. Do you see it still happening in your lives today? And they said, yeah. And I said, tell me how. And some of these kids started sharing about the curse that is in their own life, the brokenness that's in their own life. My parents are divorced, and I've never met my dad. One of my parents died. Kids don't like me. They make fun of me. I get bullied all the time at school. My family hasn't had enough money to keep going to this school, and we're going to have to pull out. Just one after the other, these stories, these kids have this brokenness in their life. And we talked about the fact that this story, as we looked at our classroom and saw that Genesis 1 and 2 are this very good place, and then Genesis 3 happens, and really the rest of this story happens on this side of Genesis 3. And so we talked about what is life like on this side of Genesis 3. And the fact that not only is the rest of this story about that, but we're still living in the midst of that story. We still live on this side of Genesis 3. We've lost access to the tree of life. We have brokenness in our relationships. We still live in this world. And just like when Adam and Eve chose to rebel and sinned and it brought curse, the reason we still have a broken world full of curse is because we keep sinning. And sin always brings curse to the world. It doesn't take long for us to turn on the news station or turn on your iPhone or iPad to a news station and start reading the news to realize, yep, that's the world we live in. We live on this side of Genesis 3. We see all the division in the U.S. nation. We see the division in the world. We see wars. We see famine. We see racism. We see a lot of brokenness in this world. You just look at the news and go, yeah, we're on this side of Genesis 3. This world is not blessed the way it's supposed to be. We don't have to just look at the news, though. We can look closer to our lives. I tell you about my students. Oh, man, as a youth pastor, just really getting involved in kids' lives and seeing the brokenness and the hurt and the pain in their lives, and oftentimes not because of their own choices, but because of the sinful choices of their parents or the people around them. I remember a young man who came to my youth group. He was part African, part Asian, and his dad had been a U.S. Soldier that went over to Vietnam and impregnated a woman and then came back to the United States. And then because he was part African-American, his grandparents tried to kill him when he was a baby, and the mom got him away, and eventually they fled to the United States, and he grew up knowing my grandparents want me dead, and I don't have a dad, don't know who my dad is. He grew up with just all this pain in his life, and I remember just sitting and crying with him as he told me these stories, and he just, I don't know what to do. He says, this is my life. I could go countless stories as a youth pastor talking with kids, but I can even go closer, my own family. We were just sharing, had dinner with James the other day and talking about my eldest niece who is now in prison, been hooked on drugs, methamphetamines, all kinds of other details of her life. And she was someone that's of mixed race that was adopted at birth, understood throughout her life that her mom, her biological mom, didn't want her. She had other things. She had a thyroid condition that contributed to her brain pattern. She was molested as a child. All the stuff that happened to her, and now it works out in her continuing bad patterns and is in prison. And my wife and I got to visit her over the break, and just to sit on the other side of a glass wall talking in a phone to this little girl that we saw as a baby and loved. This world is broken. You probably experienced some brokenness in your life. To some degree or another, you live in this world, and there's some hurt and there's some pain, because brokenness brings pain. And that's the story we live in. We live in a story that has brokenness and has pain. And you know, when I'm talking about my faith with people that don't believe in my faith, we disagree on a lot of things. But one thing that I've never had a disagreement about with anyone I've come into contact with is that this world is broken. Everyone recognizes it. You don't have to be a follower of Jesus to recognize this world isn't the best it could be. And that's the starting ground that we have with people. But we have something more than that too. Because right at the beginning of this story, right after the curse, as the curse was entering the world, in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, God is talking to the serpent, this one who has brought in this whole new system of living, this whole new way this world is full of curse. And God says to the serpent, he says, I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head, and you will strike his heel. Christian theologians throughout the ages have looked to that verse and said, if nothing else, in this verse, we have a promise from God that the one who brought this curse, the serpent, is going to be utterly and completely defeated by some human being, some offspring of the woman, some baby is going to come and grow up and defeat this serpent. Right from the beginning, God said, this curse that's brought about by this serpent is not the way things are always going to be. Someone is going to come. I'm promising you. Right from the beginning, God said, I don't want the world this way. You guys have broken this world. I am determined to fix it, and there is someone that's going to come, and he's going to defeat this serpent. He's going to win, and things aren't going to be like this forever. And I said at the beginning, we can look at the beginning of a story and find out the plot, but we can also look at the ending. And I want to look at the ending of this story in Revelation 21. Actually, in Revelation 19, we get a picture. In Revelation, which verse did I want to look at? Well, we'll look at 21 and 22. We get a picture of how things end up. In Revelation 21, verse 1, it says, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, no more mourning, no more crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. He who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. And then in Revelation 22, it says, the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are there for the healing of the nations. At the end of the story, we get a picture of these things that were lost when sin entered the world and curse came to the world. We have we've lost our intimacy of God's presence, and here at the end of the story, God's dwelling is again with man and woman. We lost this perfect marriage relationship. Man and woman are at enmity, and now we get a better relationship, Jesus and his church. The perfect marriage relationship that will last forever. We had people covering themselves in shame, and God provides these white robes in the book of Revelation that covers everyone's shame and forgives them. We lost access to the tree of life, and it says here, the tree of life is open for all to come again. And then it says after that, in verse 3 of 22, no longer will there be any curse. That's the end of this story. The end of this story says that problem that started way at the beginning, it's gonna get fixed. There's not gonna be a curse. The world will be blessed. Everything that was lost will be here, but it'll be even better. That's what this story is, and that's how this thing fits together as one story. Everything gets fixed. I want to, maybe for some of us today, that's all the sermon we need today, is just be encouraged. Maybe some of you are in the midst of some of this brokenness, and maybe some of you are in a place where some things seem hopeless. I know that sometimes when I contemplate the brokenness of this world, the curse in this world, I can get a little hopeless. I want to encourage you today, whatever brokenness is involved in your life, it's not the end of the story. The end of the story is no more curse. The end of the story is God coming and wiping every tear from our eyes. The end of the story is the marriage of Jesus and his bride. The end of the story is blessing. So I want to encourage you, have hope. And maybe that's where some of you just need to dwell right now. For the rest of us, I want to talk about how this can help us in sharing the good news of our faith with other people. As I said, there's times where I've learned that there's four spiritual laws, or there's these three steps to peace with God, and I've tried to share my faith by using those. And those are valuable things, and those are good ways of doing it. But I have come to find that as I talk to people about this story, that it makes a lot, it touches where they're at a lot better. There was a man I once, I was at an exercise place lifting some weights at a gym, and there was this guy next to me that was lifting some weights, and he starts talking to me. And at first, in my selfish human nature, I was just thinking, I'm just here to exercise. I'm not here to get into a conversation with strangers. And I wanted to just kind of answer him shortly and then just keep exercising. But God started to prick my conscience and say, what are you doing? Why are you even here in this world? So I said, okay. So I asked him about his life, and he starts telling me more about how he just got divorced. His wife left him for someone else, and he was just distraught over it. And he was working out here because he just needed to do something to get out his emotion, and his life was spiraling out of control. And he was just talking about how awful it was. And so my response to him was simply this. I said, that's not the way the world was made to be. I am so sorry. I said, I believe in a story of this world. I believe that God created a world where man and woman got along perfectly in their relationships. But it's broken. And we don't have that anymore. And I am so sorry you're enduring this broken marriage. That's not the way the world is intended to be. And we talked about that for a while, and I listened a little more about his brokenness, and then I said, I want to tell you something. I truly believe this story that's been handed down to me that says that it's not always going to be that way. I said, you know that there it says in the Bible that someday there will be a perfect marriage, but not between each of us individuals, but between Christ and his church. And he invites us to come be a part of the perfect marriage that will never end, that no brokenness will end it. And he's inviting you to be a part of that marriage as well someday. And that we were able to connect on. He was able to hear this story. Now, through that, we come down to talking about Jesus and his death. But our faith is not just a bunch of ideas and abstract thoughts about Jesus dying on a cross. It's a story. And when people ask you, what is Christianity about? It's about Jesus. But first of all, the first thing I tell them, this is what my story is about. The world as we see it today was not meant to be like this. And God has put a plan in place to fix this world completely and to restore blessing. And he's done it through his son Jesus, and he's invited you to be a part of it. And it's a beautiful story to talk with people about, because I see people that are on all kinds of sides of a political divide. They're thinking all kinds of different things, but we all agree, yeah, this world isn't right. What's your hope? And they say, oh, political, we'll win this war. And I say, you know what? My hope is that Jesus is going to fix everything. He's going to fix this. And he's inviting you to be a part of that. And we're going to move to a time of communion. And communion is about the fact that we've been invited to be a part of this story. The brokenness of Jesus that allows for this blessing to come. And so as we share in the communion, let's share in the fact that we're part of this story. We've been invited and we've joined in. And that this story, the end of this story, there will be no more curse. There will be blessing. That's our future. That's our destiny. That's our story. Let me pray for us. God, thank you so much for your story. We confess that it's hard sometimes living in this world with so much curse, with so much brokenness. It hurts, God. And we see the hurt and pain in those around us that we love. We see the hurt and pain in the world at large. People that we agree with, people that we disagree with. Either way, God, we're hurting because this world is broken. Thank you that you did not leave us to wonder why, but you gave us the story and you told us. You told us how this all started out this way. You told us that this is not the way that the world is intended to be. And God, thank you so much for giving us the end of the story in advance. This is not the way the world will always be. This is not the end of the story. You are ending all curse. You are bringing blessing. You are giving us access to the tree of life. You are giving us the perfect marriage. You are coming and dwelling with us and wiping every tear from our eyes. That is the story. And God, I pray for anyone here that has not chosen to be a part of that story through your son, Jesus Christ. I pray you would move them towards that. I pray for those of us that have, that we would become great storytellers and telling the world around us why this story is so beautiful and so inviting. We love you and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.